Lots of people wrapped up in Chicago Marathon plastic as they walk by the window here on beautiful, magnificent Mile. Hey, how you doing out there? How'd you do in that race? Yeah? Do well? Good. All right, you
40,
won.
40,000 hey, plus winners, runners. Right?
40 how many?
40,000 plus runners.
Wow. That's fantastic.
From all over the world.
That's great. Do we have an official winner yet?
Yes, we do. We have the male and the female. Look at
he's outside our window bouncing up and down right now. What's your name, young man? John. Yeah, John just won the race.
Oh, okay.
Congratulations.
We'll say
John.
He won the race.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you got to make somebody's day happy.
Don't
right?
tell John, but Abel Kiriu of Kenya actually won.
John, I don't know if you heard that, but Abel actually won. But,
2 hours, 11 minutes, and 22 seconds.
Wow, that's some serious time.
He won a record, right, Veronica?
I do believe so. And the one that won for the women, this is her second straight win, Florence Kiplagat, also of Kenya.
Wow. Those Kenyans, man, they can run.
They can really run. What's going on in Kenya that makes them run? Or they just like running, right?
It's the coffee. They make good the Kenyan coffee.
The Arabica bean?
Yeah, it just gets them going. You know any of the secrets, Veronica? Is there any Kenyan secrets that you want to share with us?
My son, when he was about 7 years old, my nephew was much faster at him than running. Mm-hmm. At running, it just could beat him every time. And he said it wasn't fair because he thinks he has springs in his ankles. Maybe they have springs in their ankles.
Genetically speaking, possibly their DNA, right? You know, mm-hmm. something in there that's just
He might have had something there.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, congratulations to them, too. That's a big honor. And these guys go around, like, the country and the world and do these giant races, right? I mean, this is not just Chicago. They go to New York and all these other big, you know, cities.
And, it probably becomes an addiction when you speak to people that do this all over. They feel like they miss out on something big when they do not travel and do this.
Besides runner's high, you mean?
Yes, I guess. Yeah, I guess you can call it a runner's high. We'll invent that word here today.
No, it's a real word.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is
when
it?
When you run,
oh, yeah.
You're addicted to it. You feel weird if you don't run.
Yeah. It's all sorts of adrenaline and euphoric hormones and whatnot is getting secreted as you're running. It's real, Dave.
And you bore people to death with, you know, how much you've run for the day.
Yeah.
I used to text everybody saying, you know, I did X amount of miles today. And they're like, who cares?
Right, exactly.
I don't run. I'm having my burger.
Yeah, I'm running to the burger shop. I got you. That's Dave's marathon.
Yeah.
Going to Fat Burger.
By the way, Frank, Veronica Carter is going to be a DIY expert next week with her autumn candles.
I'm so excited. I can't
wait. I've
been
working on them.
Good, good. Make
them
good.
A bunch of fall scents for you.
I can't wait. I'm very excited about it. This week, we actually have another one of WGN Radio's very own, Judy Pilek, the Goodbye Girl, is joining us because she makes some DIY Halloween decorations all from Goodwill. So you know they're under budget. They're like pennies on the dollar, and they look pretty darn cool. She's going to be joining us around 2 o'clock, right?
Yes. She gets very creative, and she likes it. She decorated the newsroom already, and she started on the green room.
Yeah, she's good. She hooked up the green room pretty well. I think she's got designer in her, Judy Pilek. She's a crafty little gal.
Yeah, she can't stay still. I guess that's what it
good
is.
Good for her.
She's like
her.
Veronica. She's always either baking or making candles.
I
or
hear of
something.
This baking, but I do not taste of this baking.
There is a pumpkin pound cake up here today with a buttermilk glaze.
Dave.
I should have brought you some, Frank. I'm sorry. I did eat some.
Yes.
It's yummy.
How about during news break? You go run up and get me a piece. That would be nice.
Okay, sounds like a deal.
All right, cool. Speaking of crafty and creative designers here, we're being joined around 11:15 by one of the best in the business in the world of traditional interior design. Brian R. Judge is joining us. And we're going to be talking about some of the top design trends here in Chicago. And you know, it's really interesting because on our television show, Dave, we focus on vintage homes, you know, homes from 1950 and older. Some of our homes are early 1800s, and they're all in this kind of Victorian style or an American four square. And what we do for the show Downtown Shabby is we take these old homes that, you know, look like these beautiful Victorians from the outside, that are these beautiful Victorians on the outside. But on the inside, the homeowners want it to be modernized.
You could go with the motto that Brian has. He says, trends are measured in weeks, style in decades.
I love that.
That's his motto. And
it's so true. It's so true. So we're going to talk about with Brian about, you know, keeping the tradition of some of these old homes, because I personally love that, too. I wish some of these homeowners would say, keep it exactly the way it is or restore it to what it was. Because that, to me, is truly the history of the home. You know, going in there and gutting it out and modernizing is definitely awesome. And it is the whole premise of my television show. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, there's something that's sad about that.
Which,
you
know? It starts in a week, October 15, 8 p.m. Central. We got to be stuck to the television, right, Frank?
Yeah. I mean, this will be, unfortunately, I won't be broadcasting before it. So I just want to let everybody know that our premiere for the show happens October 15th. 8 p.m. Central Time on FYI Network. It will be the debut of the new show Downtown Shabby, featuring myself, my wife, and a bunch of amazing homeowners. And we've done some 8 homes across the Chicagoland. And some you'll know in neighborhoods like Wrigleyville, in Logan Square, and some in LaGrange, and some in Evanston. Really cool to see the backdrop of our neighborhoods as part of a huge national television show. And some homes you might just even recognize. You may even know these people.
Yes, that's what I like about the show, because sometimes you can see national shows and you really don't identify yourself with, especially if over here it's snowing and they're showing homes over there that's already like in L.A. that, you know, it's very sunny. So it's very localized. That's what I like.
Yeah, and we're really trying to support, Illinois, you know, and support Chicago and the surrounding suburbs, because there really isn't that many national shows, especially in the home improvement genre, right now being shot here. So it's great to be representing, you know, our people here. So
Chi-Town.
That's right. October 15th, 8 p.m. on FYI Network. Later on, we're going to be joined by the theater group Don't Mess with the Devils. We're talking about a play on how money changes people. It's a play, right, Dave?
Yeah, it's a play, and we're going to get Halloween in here because you're coming in costumes.
Ooh, that's exciting. I like people who dress
perfect
up
for costumes. Facebook Live.
Yeah, exactly. So we're broadcasting right now, folks. You can actually listen to this show online at WGNradio.com/listen, or join the club and get on my Facebook page, Frank Fontana Design, and watch this show broadcasting live as we speak. But before we jump into it, Brian here, we'd have a caller. Hey, Sue, you're on with Frank Fontana. How you doing?
Hi. I'm doing very well. Thank you. Happy Sunday. I have a quick question. Can I maybe access your program, FYI, on the internet, or is that something that I probably have to subscribe to the channel?
Do you have Comcast, or do you have DirecTV?
Well, I have Comcast for the computer.
Yeah. If you have Comcast through the computer, you could just punch in FYI Network. It's an A&E network.
Okay.
So if you get A&E, you probably have FYI. I think it's $2.69 on Comcast. And then you can, it's actually available to record on demand right now. You can't watch it on demand, but you can set it up for a DVR recording. So I'm pretty certain you could find it online as well.
Terrific. Thank you so much and have a great day.
Thank you, Sue. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, speaking of design shows and all that, first, just a reminder, we are live on Facebook right now. Go to Frank Fontana Designs on Facebook. You can watch the show live. My kids are watching. Hi, Luca. Hi, Lola. Hi, my wife, Sherry, who's my co-host on the show. And in studio right now, who you could see his lovely face as well, Brian R. Judge, interior designer, voted one of 15 best interior designers in Chicago, according to Bill Direct. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah. So, Brian, you know what I dig about you? Hold on here. Just speak right a little closer to the microphone here.
Okay. How's that?
That's much better.
All right.
Brian, your vibe is what I dig. Like, you got the whole thing going on here. You know, you got the cool tweed jacket. You got the little scarf going on.
Uh-huh.
You live the design style that you create.
I do.
Why don't you tell us about this?
Actually, in a way, I kind of like to think that I design the styles that I have. This is what I've been like most of my life, really. The ascots, the tweeds, herringbones, you know.
What brought that on at an early age?
A lot of my upbringing, a lot of stuff New England, kind of an upbringing, kind of waspy sort of thing. So it's just kind of...
You grew up on the East Coast?
East Coast, yeah. So it's just, this kind of look for me is just kind of ingrained. I wouldn't know anything else, to be completely honest.
Was your mom a design?
She was a designer in a way. Not like she didn't have like a big business or anything, but she did a lot of work for friends and that kind of stuff. So I kind of got into it through her. But I was sort of did a lot of it on my own. I was a kid whose bedroom changed every 6 months or something.
And did your parents encourage that?
It depended. If I was trying to spend a lot of money on it, they didn't so much. So budget.
So
what
you
kind of...
you put a design together at like 7? You're like, Mom, here's the plan.
It was kind
I need a budget for this. What do you think? Can you fork me 20?
That would sort of be it. Or we would go to like Brimfield there in Pennsylvania, or like, you know,
great,
antique shows and
great
stuff.
Great antique shows.
It is one of the best. Yeah, and New England, obviously up and down the coast, has some of the best antiques in the country. So we would go, and I'd be like, I want this. That is $4,000. We're not putting that in your bedroom. I still want this. So I'm like, one day when I'm older, I will be able to buy that.
They never gave into the $4,000.
Not usually, no. Yeah, that was a bit of a stretch.
Right.
But yeah, the bedroom was changing constantly. You know.
But even as a kid, did you have a pretty traditional room design?
I did, yeah. It was a lot of like Persian rugs, blue and white.
That you would voluntarily ask for? Like most kids would be like, oh, I want that Superman rug or that race car bed. You're like, no, give me the...
Well, a lot of it was just, you know, what my family did. I just kind of emulated a lot of what was around me, and that was what was around me, so it's what I felt comfortable with.
Yeah.
The kind of, you know, kitschier kids things, which are fine, just wasn't really what I was into. It just, right. You know, I was like, it's nice, but I don't really care that much.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like, you know, I had like 7 or 8 different lighting styles that I could do in the bedroom at any given time. You know, a lot of that kind of thing. So
at what age did you realize, like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life?
That's an odd question. I wanted to when I was younger, and then I kind of got away from it. Because a lot of my upbringing, I sort of like, you know, oh, I'm rebelling against my family and my upbringing, you know, like most kids do, as an idiot, you know, like most kids are.
Yeah.
So I kind of went away from it. Then a few years ago, I started talking about it a lot more, about 12 years ago, 13 years ago. And my wife one day, we were sitting down, and she was like, you know, you need to do something about this or shut up, which I thought was brilliant advice. Absolutely brilliant
advice. Wives always have that kind of straightforward, do it or shut up advice.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. So we were living in Michigan at the time, and I found a design school that I wanted to go to here in Chicago, Harrington, now defunct.
Did you get to graduate before it became defunct?
Oh, yeah, I graduated a few years ago. So, okay. Yeah. But yeah, so then we moved here within 3 or 4 months of her giving me that advice. And that's, you know, that's kind of where that
was. Was it advice or more like an ultimatum?
It was a little bit of column A.
Yeah, right.
A little bit of column A. I think she was just kind of getting tired of me talking about it, which is understandable because it was just constantly. It was just, oh, well, I could do this here, and I could do that there, and I could do this there. And every place we went into, I could change this, and I could do that.
Yeah.
It was like,
sounds like me. My wife is, I do that to my wife all the time.
I think a lot of designers is really kind of hat wearing.
And you know, I'm glad you say this because I try to explain this to her at times and other people who are like, why don't you just like not do that? You can't not do that.
It's almost impossible.
It's almost impossible. It's like you have to force yourself not to eat. You know, it's like the same thing. You got to force your brain, your creative part of your brain, to shut off. And you know, I'm sure you do the same thing. I could walk into a room and just all of a sudden I have like this overlay image of my head of, okay, here's the base, you know, blueprint. And then I could start dropping in scenery in my head, like a computer, like a rendering.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Since I was young, really, I have this weird thing. I can remember the interior of almost any room I've ever been in. Kind of like verbatim, like it's almost like a picture in my head. I'm not that way with anything else.
Yeah.
Just rooms that I've been in, I'll forget names after 20 minutes. I'll forget people's faces.
But you remember that duck that you placed on that mantle.
Even a room when I was a little kid. Houses we lived in are people, friends of mine. I could probably draw it right now, the layout and design of every home.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's bizarre, but, you know, it helps.
Speaking of... well, not so shabby, but traditional style homes. Joining us right now is interior designer Brian R. Judge. Brian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So your specialty, self-admitted specialty, is traditional design.
Indeed.
What is traditional design?
Traditional design sort of covers a small gambit of ideas. It can go early American, colonial American, which is kind of my favorite look. Even though a lot of people kind of misunderstand it, English country house style, which a lot of people think, oh, it's, you know, it's English, it's, you know, it's not American, but actually it is. The woman that created it was an American, and she was trying to bring, you know, the Gilded Age look to England. So it actually is a very American style, even though it has that English term to it. Yeah. But it's mostly, you know, it's things that have been around for hundreds of years, you know, a lot of antiques, fine paintings, Persian rugs, blue and white porcelain.
Well, it's interesting that one person can actually coin creating a design style. Isn't it a collective of many things that create a style?
It really is. A lot of it comes down to it just being, you know, it's easier to call it something.
Right.
I think that's really what it comes down to. Yeah. It's just, you know, instead of taking an hour and a half to describe the look, just say this name and all of a sudden you've got it. Like when somebody says mid-century modern, you don't have to describe what that is.
Yeah.
People have it, you know, ding, there it is.
Yep. Most days today, people think of the TV show Mad Men. That's how they refer mid-century modern. Oh, yeah, like that show.
It is, yeah. Right? Yeah, regretfully, a lot of television, which kind of gets it right and sort of gets it wrong a little bit, is where a lot of people kind of take their cues from what kind of design they're looking for.
Yeah, so how popular today is traditional design?
Regretfully, not as popular as I would like it to be. Years ago, you know, 50s and 60s kind of a thing. It was, you know, kind of at its height here in America, other than, you know, back in the day when it was.
Sure, right. When it was the design.
Exactly.
Right.
When it was modern. But yeah, it's kind of gone down a lot in recent years. There's some bastions of it. A lot of the East Coast, a lot of New England states.
Yeah.
They still have a lot of love for it. The South, parts of the South, which love that kind of look. And they do it so well.
The new fad of transitional design has kind of stolen the thunder of traditional and fused it with contemporary, and thus there's no longer a need for pure traditional design?
It's muddied the waters a bit. Yeah, I actually don't like the term transitional design.
I don't either. I got to be honest with you.
It's kind of, to me, it's sort of one of those things where it's like, I'm not really willing to commit to this, or I'm not really, you know, going to commit to that. So I'm just going to mash them together and kind of say that I'm comfortable in this zone, even though I don't know what it is.
Right.
But it's just this weird thing that people have kind of gravitated toward. And when it, you know, started being used, it just took off like crazy. And I was like, oh, good Lord, no. But yeah.
I guess it's kind of like, you know, to bring it to nutrition, like the paleo craze, where it's like, that's the new hottest thing. I'm going to eat meat. Yeah. I'm going to eat meat, no carbs. Well, that's kind of been around for a long time.
Right. You
know, it's renaming something that exists. And really what we're talking about, you know, the transitional is people who like the lines of traditional, but like the more modern finishes and fabrics that are found.
Right. Yeah. What a lot of people, I think, don't realize is that traditional design, its bone structure is in almost all design.
Yes.
Because even in like very contemporary design, a lot of what's done, the way things are positioned, the way things are, you know, matched up against each other, it has its origins in very traditional, you know, old American design. But a lot of people don't really want to understand that. They're like, oh no, it's contemporary. It's really not. It's like, but everything that's been done now, being done now, has been done before.
Yeah.
You know, that's very much one of those things.
So Brian, you know, sell me on why I would want, like, you brought some props in studio and they're very autumn and fall, you know, flavored, props. They're beautiful. Show me, you know, as if I don't know, like, why I'd want to have traditional design in my home.
There's a heritage to it, is really how I describe to a lot of clients. That's really really what it comes down to me. There's the heritage of it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm not talking into the mic, am I? I'm just used to people not wanting to listen to me.
It's almost impossible.
But yeah, there's that heritage. There's that, you know, that tradition, obviously.
Yeah.
It's warm. It is really inviting. A lot of people think traditional design is very stark and cold and, you know, like gallery spaces and that kind of thing, something they would see in a museum. I'm like, no, it's really not.
Right.
Even with like using antiques and that kind of thing, which I tend to use quite a bit.
And you brought some, like, looks like an antique duck.
Antique duck decoy, yeah. That's part of my collection. I refer clients to buying them a lot, especially for autumn, you know, design, you know, putting those little things in to make the home feel more autumn. It's one of those kind of rustic ideas that you can put in almost anywhere. Other than like the highest contemporary kind of space, it'll fit anywhere.
Yeah, I like it.
I personally love them. I have a large collection. Way too much for my home.
How about color palette? What color palette would you suggest for somebody who's trying to introduce a little bit of a traditional flair to
a little bit of traditional flair? Greens are always really, really good. Medium to darker greens.
More hunter greens,
that kind of thing, yeah. My own home right now, actually, the main living space is a dark hunter green. It has very kind of a hunting lodge sort of a vibe to
it.
So
for people who are scared of that, because a lot of clients, I'll suggest darker, heavy colors.
Everyone's
like, oh my God, no, the trend is gray. The trend is taupe. The trend is, you know, all these light colors.
Or grayish.
Right. And that's what everybody's doing.
Wants.
You know,
Chicago is very, very heavy into those color palettes.
Boring. I mean, I work with it constantly. I love it. I could do it with my eyes closed.
Right.
But truly the challenge in design comes with challenging yourself and pushing yourself out of comfort zones and then creating something amazing with it.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of clients that I have, obviously, you know, have that same kind of feeling. And it's really just kind of pushing them toward the romance of it. That's oddly enough where they accept it a lot more, I find, is, you know, telling them that, you know, this is much more relaxing. I use a lot of color psychology when I do design work, too. And I tell them, you know, like, especially with the green, it's a very soothing color. You know, if you have a very stressful job, you know, you come home to a green space, it actually does calm you down. It kind of helps you, you know, break out of whatever stress you had at work, you know, or whatever your day was bringing.
That and a martini.
That,
which go together in the traditional design.
They really do. Yeah. They really do. I recommend the martinis heavily.
Right.
Yeah, two or three or four or ten, you know, whatever you need.
Yeah, that's great. And then complimentary color palettes. If I said, okay, you sold me on the Hunter Green.
Mm-hmm.
What color palette should I kind of follow suit after that?
I tend to use, I like red, kind of deeper reds with the greens. I know a lot of people have that kind of, oh, it's Christmassy, but it's really not if you use the right reds. Like bright reds, obviously, you're going to head toward that area.
Well, it's Christmassy because it's traditional.
It is traditional.
And Christmas is based in tradition.
It's based in very heavily in tradition. So I tend to use like darker reds, you know, kind of not really burgundies, but kind of veering that way. Gold.
Or cranberry, maybe.
Cranberry kind of a thing. Yeah, just anything in that sort of palette. I mean, there's thousands of reds to pick from. Golds, kind of nice warm yellows, you know, work really well too. Darker blues.
Would you stay away from orange?
I would always stay away from orange in anything I ever do. Accents in orange are fine. As you can see here, I have kind of the pumpkins, these mini pumpkins.
Yeah, and if you're watching right now on Facebook Live at Frank Fontana Design, you could see what we're talking about here. We have Brian brought in a great display of some decor that we're mentioning right now, and it looks great. I love the candle tones.
Candles, I think, are great to add. A lot of people have a hard time adding them during the year, but autumn is the perfect time for it.
Yeah.
It really, really is. Absolutely, I put candles anywhere I possibly can, but they're just wonderful. And if you're worried about fire, there's a lot of great, like the LED candles now.
Sure,
which is the one that I have here, which they're made out of real wax.
I thought that was real.
They do. That's the thing. I was against them for years and years and years, but there was like some things in my home that I wanted candles on all the time. And my wife was like, "I'm not going to let you have candles on 24 hours a day."
Right.
So I'm like, okay, I need to finally go to the LEDs.
Like your wife really loves you to tolerate, you know, like you're the same thing my wife tolerates, you know.
Yeah, like, she has to be incredibly tolerant. I'm a very difficult person to live with. I really, really am. So
that's Brian R. Judge, interior designer. He's going to be joining us for one more segment here. If you have questions about the design style, traditional, and how to work it into your home, you can always call us at 312-981-7200. We'll open up the phone lines. Brian, how can people get a hold of you if they're interested in learning more about traditional design?
I would say the best place is through my website, just brjudge.com. That's, you know, kind of the hub of any real designer's life.
Is the web, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a lot more than it used to be, but it's very much a, you know, day in, day out source nowadays.
Hey, and by the way, we're giving away a Luminati's gift certificate. So if you would like one, let's see here. Why don't we do this? Let's get people to call in 312-981-7200. Name the most traditional restaurant or hotel in Chicago by and Brian will actually verify that, because I'm sure you already know which one in your mind.
Oh yeah, anybody that knows me knows that I'm there all the time.
All right, let's see if you could name that traditional hospitality venue throughout Chicagoland. 312-981-7200, win yourself a Luminati's gift certificate. All right, we were talking a little bit about some of your quotes. I really like them. They're interesting, you know. Let's see, possibly the most overlooked part of a home, closets. You're saying here that closets should be designed like any other space.
I do, yeah.
Think of it in terms of a luxurious display for your clothing and accessories rather than a mere storage space.
Yeah.
Wallpaper accents, color, and covering and mirrors are all good options. Talk to me about that.
I kind of started doing that a few years ago. I was doing a number of homes, and the closet, I started realizing that nobody does anything with the closet. It's just, you know, throw on a quick coat of paint, you're done. You know, maybe a nice, you know, rod for the clothes or something like that. But, you know, for like closets that you're not having custom built, that's really where it comes down to. And I started realizing that, you know, there needs to be something else. You know, a closet, you know, it's your clothes. It's what you show the world of yourself, you know, every day in, day out. So I started putting wallpaper in them, you know. At first, it was just kind of a test. I was like, oh my God, I hope this works. And thankfully, the client loved it. And they were like, oh, you know, it really sets off everything nicely. You know, it makes me enjoy actually going in and picking out clothes in the morning. So
that
I started
makes
doing
sense.
It. I thought so, yeah. It's something that never really had crossed my mind before. I'd never really seen it done. But I was just like, oh, you know, this just, it works. And then I've done them in numerous other homes since. I did it in my own home. It's, you know, it's an easy, quick fix. It's just
and not expensive, I would imagine.
It's really not. Yeah. And one of the nice things is, especially for people that are kind of scared to like do like a large scale wallpaper or like a really bright color, do it in the closet. because it's closed most of the time. It's just you that sees it. That way it kind of gets you feeling a little more comfortable with using these things that you're not as comfortable with in the main part of your home.
Love that. Love that. All right. We got some calls coming in to win a Lou Monati's gift certificate to name the most traditional space, in their opinion, in Chicagoland as regards to a restaurant or hospitality venue. We got Terry on the line. How are you?
Hi there.
So what say you? What do you think is the Brian's probably best pick for most traditional restaurant or bar in town?
Oh, I thought you said hotel.
Or hotel. That's fine, too.
Okay. Okay. It, to me, instantly popped into my head, it's either the Drake or the Palmer House.
Brian? Those would be two of the top ones for hotels, yeah. Easily.
You're right. I was going to say Drake, too. So, Tori, boom. We had a bunch of callers, and Dave screened you, and you nailed it.
Right out of the gate. Congratulations.
Right out of the gate. That's awesome. You won yourself a Lou Monati's gift certificate. Hold on, Terry, and Dave Miranda, my producer, will get you that information.
Thank you so much. I really enjoy your show, Frank.
Oh, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. All right, so there you have it. I was going to say Drake Hotel, too. I love the styling in there.
There's no place better in Chicago, really, for a hotel. That's really the top one.
So if somebody wanted to get a flavor for true traditional design, they should go to the Drake Hotel.
They should go to the Drake Hotel. And if they're looking for a flavorful interior design, traditional design, go to RL Restaurant.
RL, the Ralph,
the Ralph Lauren restaurant. Yeah,
right
there
here in Michigan.
There is nothing better in Chicago.
Yeah, Ralph Lauren has certainly done really well with traditional.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's really nobody better except me.
Ralph Lauren, if you're listening, please call in 312-981-7200.
And don't sue me.
And don't, no. That's great. I haven't been in there in a while, but you're right. I love it. And he uses Hunter Green and uses
exactly.
those layers
it's
and
very
those textures.
Layers
heavy leathers, the brown leathers, the distressed leathers.
Yeah, that's if you're looking to get an idea for traditional design, go there. Go there any time of the day. It's
traditional
it's
design
fabulous.
Done well.
And done well. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's not traditional. It's like a version of traditional design. It's traditional, like more of an elegant. It's a little more modernized in some
cases.
That's
what I was going to say. It's probably for somebody, a younger couple who is looking to keep, capture a little bit of a traditional flair, but keep it cool, keep it a little edgy.
Exactly.
I think that's the way to go.
That's the way. And that's because a lot of clients, are younger clients, and I'm trying to get them into traditional design. I take them for, dinners there quite a bit. I have a lot of client meetings there.
So that's a good place for inspiration as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorite places. If I'm downtown anytime, I always stop in, even just for a tea, just real quick, just
for
to get
tea.
In there.
Right. I love that. That's great. Now let's go back to one of your other quotes here.
Sure.
I get this question a lot, too. The question of the ages. At what height should artwork hang? Simple answer, the center piece should be at 57 to 60 inches high from the floor. Right?
From the floor.
Now, what if you have high ceilings?
Even if you have high ceilings. Doesn't matter. It's considered gallery height. What a lot of people do, they'll put it at eye height, which seems like the right way to do it. The idea with it is at hanging it at those levels is you're looking down on the art a little bit, not like down, but the eye rests comfortably more when it looks down at something, not when it looks up at something. It causes more strain. That's why I'm thoroughly against TVs above fireplaces too, because looking up, it's bad for you.
Yeah.
But hanging art at that height, no matter how big the piece is, no matter how high your ceilings are, it's just a general, perfect place to hang things. It looks nice above most furniture, the height, because you don't want a lot of height.
Regardless of how high your ceilings are, you're saying keep it at that height.
Keep it at that height, yeah. Even with large pieces, too.
Should the bottom hit that bottom number, or should it, with a
large
middle. Piece?
The middle. The middle should hit that bottom number. I mean, that 57 to 60. I tend to do 58. I don't know why. It's just kind of the height that I use all the time.
Yeah.
The middle, no matter how big the piece is. I mean, really, really large monumental pieces, which, let's be honest, most people aren't going to have in their homes.
Right.
You can go up higher
than
that.
Like the portrait of myself hunting with my hound dog.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Sure, that would be more for your lodge,
exactly.
your cabin. Even large pieces. I have one hanging over our sofa right now that's 5 by 4.5 feet. This lovely bird picture. And even at that, I still have it at that level. So to some degree, people think, it looks off because some of the stuff next to it is a lot smaller.
Sure.
But over time, you start realizing that there is a balance to it. There is a harmony that kind of pieces everything together. And also, if you're stacking art on, one on top of the other, you know, one above the other on a wall, you kind of want to keep the
bottom
middle.
Which is pretty big in traditional design. You see a lot of gallery-like stacked walls with, you know, four to eight photos kind of montaged or you know, paintings on a wall.
Yeah, what you want to do in that situation is the top image, the top piece of art that you have, which is, should be smaller, a little bit smaller than the one below it, is the bottom of that should be at that 57 to 60 inches. That's how you want to work with that. You know, just keep that bottom. That way it kind of overall evens out the size, you know, kind of considering it as one large piece, even though it's two.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Traditional. Very traditional.
Very like traditional.
All right. This has been really fun, man. I could do this for hours, but unfortunately, we have to get going here. We have our in-house crafty designer, Judy Pilak. Our very own Judy Pilak is joining us right after this break to talk about DIY Halloween decorations. First, I want to thank Brian R. Judge for joining us. Brian, one more time. What's the website?
It's brjudge.com.
We're getting ready for Halloween because it's definitely autumn season. It's Halloween season. Actually, Christmas season, if you look at some stores.
It's just 'tis the season, Dave.
Yes, it
is. It's the season for dressing up in scantily clad outfits and making fun Halloween scary decorations like our news anchor from WGN Radio, Judy Pilak, does.
Hi, Frank.
What are you doing?
I'm decorating for Halloween, of course.
I knew you would, Judy. And you know what? The office looks great, by the way.
Oh, I'm not even finished. I've just started.
Oh, boy.
She decorated the newsroom. She decorated the green room.
Right. And she's decorating our studio with some of her amazing Goodwill found decor items here. Judy, so the Goodbye Girl. Tell us the story for those who don't know how you got hooked up to be the Goodbye Girl. Hello, Goodbye Girl.
I know. Catchy little phrase, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, I have been shopping at Goodwill my whole life. Well, at resale shops, but exclusively Goodwill for the past probably 20 years. So I've just always wanted to, you know, spread the word. I felt like people, they were kind of nervous about going to resale shops. And I just, you know, and it's funny because they're always commenting on my great finds, my clothes, my crafts, whatever. And I'm always pushing them, go to Goodwill. Now, I really... Everyone shops at Goodwill.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. I do. Yeah. It's cool to shop at Goodwill. I mean, why would you spend money anywhere else when you can find the same goods at Goodwill?
Absolutely. And it's, of course, such a good deal. And like you said, it's cool. The younger generation loves it. You know, you find such unique things and such great deals. And, I mean, people shop there because they need to sometimes, you know.
But more so, like you say, nowadays it's actually in trend to buy, you know, secondhand stuff and repurpose it and redesign it and recreate it. You know, I do it all the time, especially for, you know, my TV show. I mean, if you want to do anything, you know, to help Mother Nature, you could, you know, buy green, you could do all this, but the best thing to do is recycle, repurpose. That is the number one thing you could do.
Upcycling is such a trend these days, and you're right. I mean, I can't imagine paying full price or buying something new when I can go to a resale shop and get it. It's just, and you do, you feel good about it. You're helping the environment, and you're certainly helping your pocketbook.
So what did you, the items that I'm looking at right now, especially this wreath right here, just look at this kid's at the windows. We're going to spook them out with this wreath that Judy Pilak made. They're all going, oh my God, they're turning away in shock and awe right now. It's gross, she's saying. She's puking.
You got a big crowd of kids here, Frank.
I know. Judy, thank you, because I'm holding up your wreath that's got a rat hanging in the middle of it with some spooky. How did you make this thing?
Okay, so that was so easy, and I did make it spooky. Of course, you could make it cutesy, trick-or-treaty, however you'd like. I just bought a wreath, the regular, you know, styrofoam circle wreath, and I covered it with burlap. You can really use anything, ribbon, you know, any kind of cloth you want, but burlap, I think, looks really good for the fall.
Did you find the fabric at Goodwill? Do they have things like that there?
They absolutely do have things like that there. You have to look, but they have a whole craft section. I mean, and you know what I do? I buy this stuff year-round. So I'm always well stocked.
Oh,
if I see something like that, I know to buy it.
You got a little inventory stash somewhere.
Oh, you bet I do. Goodbye girl knows a goodbye when she sees one.
Yeah.
So you could wrap it with anything. And then I just went to the dollar store and bought some, you know, packages, dollar packages of spiders and snakes and little bugs that they sell, you know, rings, anything you want, and I just stuck them on there. I didn't even glue it. I just stuck them because it's styrofoam, and they just stick in.
Yeah, it's super
cute.
And then
I just hung the rat for my last little piece on there.
The rat is the piece de resistance to the whole piece, let me tell you.
Isn't it, though? You could, of course, use a blackbird as well. That would look really good,
that
too.
That would look good, too. I like it, though. The rat is... Like, I'd hang this on my door, legitimately. I think this is great. I think, you know, people... Yeah. And people would ask, oh, where did you get that? And I'll tell them Judy Pilek made it.
Absolutely. For under... it was probably under $6.
Under $6. I mean, this is something you would go to, like, a Joann Fabrics and pay, you know, $30 for or more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, of course, you can always put lights around it as well.
That's true, too. Speaking of lights, you have a little trick that you like to do with mason jars, don't you?
Yes. Now, you know, mason jars are so abundant at every Goodwill store. It's crazy how many they have. And they're usually about, I don't know, 25 cents maybe. So I get the mason jars. I put stickers on them, scary for fun, you know, trick-or-treaty kind of stickers. And then I shove a whole line of lights in there. Just, you know, I buy a box of lights.
How did you find the orange lights, though?
Oh, they're everywhere now. You got to go to the Halloween section. So, I mean, I have tons and tons of, you know, lights I've collected over the years. They last forever. You only use them for a couple weeks. And, yeah, you just put them in. And, you know, that's a great idea for Christmas as well. You can get red or green lights and also do the same thing and put a little bow on it and just plug it in. And you've got a nice little, you know, soothing light.
I like it. And you put the cap back on it and drill a hole or just leave it open like that?
You could. I leave it open, but you certainly could put the cap back on and just drill a hole right through it.
Oh, it's cool. I dig it. You could probably even stick some webs around it to make it a little more Halloween-y. I like it, though.
Absolutely. Now you got the idea.
I got a lot. You're getting my creative juices flowing, Judy Pilek. I like it.
Oh, yeah. Good, good. That's my aim.
How you doing? I heard you got a little bit of a cold over the last couple of days. You feeling better?
Goodness. Yeah, I was about 2 weeks, actually.
Jeez.
Yes, I'm feeling much better. It's going around. Everyone in my house is sick, and everyone at work is sick.
Well, that's great. Now I got to wash my hands and, like, sterilize.
I know.
Anybody on this mic, Dave, sick? Was Roe sick during the week, Judy?
He was not, so you should be okay.
Good.
But, you know, Roe, he's always got something, he thinks. We call that a hypochondriac.
No comment.
Actually, I just got over a fever, too. Look at these fever blisters that I have.
I can't see anything. You keep saying I don't see anything.
Oh, actually.
Maybe they went away.
They're a little bit.
Put a little cover-up on there, Dave. That's all right.
Some bronzer.
They're fever blisters, but who knows what that is.
Who knows
where my mouth was, right?
This kid, if you ever follow Dave Miranda, which, by the way, go follow Dave Miranda on Instagram, and you'll be jealous of his lifestyle. David Miranda, Chicago, and he's all over town doing all these events. He's hosting this. He's partying there. He's with that celebrity.
It's called networking. It's just
no, Dave. It's called partying, Dave.
we all want to be David Miranda.
We do. I mean, we could. I just live vicariously through him.
Yeah. Especially, every Monday in the newsroom, it's a new story.
when you want to work at an airport.
Work at an airport?
Yeah, I was telling Judy at the Blackhawks game, we had a Blackhawks outing, and I said that my dream job when I was a little kid was working at an airport. I don't know doing what, but I just wanted to work at an airport.
Like a TSA person?
I have no idea. And my teacher said, well, learn another language. So I learned Italian.
You did?
Yeah.
Ti parlo italiano?
Parlo un po'. He studiato 2 anni nella secondaria.
Yeah.
So let's think about this. He learned another language in order to work at the airport.
And he chose Italian, which there's not too many Italian
What I should have learned
airlines.
Was English.
You should have learned English, right. Exactly. That's funny. Anyway, Judy is joining us because she has a slew of really creative DIY projects for us to talk about. And we already talked about how to create a DIY Halloween wreath with some items from Goodwill and the dollar store, which looks fantastic. We talked about mason jar Halloween lights. Very cool. Very inexpensive. And I heard you could pick up the mason jars at Goodwill for like 25 cents. Is that true?
Absolutely. They might even be 10 cents. I can't. I have so many now, I don't buy them anymore. But they're so plentiful, and they're so cheap. So you should be able to find the size and the shape you want.
Now, I'm holding up what looks like a gypsy pumpkin. Tell me about
a gypsy pumpkin. I love it.
Yeah, it's super cool. So you made a pumpkin. Why don't you tell people how you made this? I'm holding up. And by the way, if you want to see what I'm holding, go to Facebook and go to my Facebook page, Frank Fontana Design. We're streaming live. You can see the video. I'm calling it a gypsy pumpkin. It's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. And I must give props to one of my favorite charities. That's where I got this idea. And actually, they made one of those. I made one, and they made the other one. And it's Poised for Success, and they're a group that helps women in need, a lot of domestic abuse victims, get back on their feet, and they clothe them. They give them professional outfits so that they can go back into the workforce.
Oh, that's nice.
So what happens, isn't it an awesome, really, really great organization? And what happens is people donate clothes and purses and shoes and jewelry, everything. Well, their standards are very high. They're just not going to give these women, you know, subpar clothing. So a lot of times they get stuff that they really can't, they don't want to give out. So they upcycle because that's what everyone does.
That's what everybody should do.
Yeah, right. And what you're seeing there is probably a dress or, you know, could have been a shirt that they couldn't use. So you can basically use anything, any article of clothing, a sweater, a skirt, a shirt, a dress. But you want to have a piece of material that has two open ends. And then you put it inside out and you grab one of the ends with a rubber band. And then you put it right side up again, and there's the bottom of your pumpkin. And then you stuff that with what they use, which I really like, and which, you know, we don't know what to do with all these plastic Jewel and, you know, Walmart bags that we're all moving away from, but there are still plenty out there.
Sure.
Fit with that, because that's a really kind of good consistency. And you stuff it into a pumpkin shape, and then you just start decorating it. You could put ribbon on it. You could put ribbon around it to make it more of a pumpkin look, kind of with those indentations, if you'd like.
Well, I was going to say, both of them have these indentations. How did you create the folds in them? Did you just fold the article of clothing at certain points?
Yeah, you can do it. You can just kind of mess with it a little bit, and you just kind of gather it up a little bit, or put a ribbon around it, you know, on six ways, and that'll give you your little shape, or you don't even need to do that. It's round. Find the way it is. And then you take a rubber band, another rubber band, and you close the top part. And that's going to be your stem.
Yeah.
You can make that as long or as short as you want. And, you know, the more raggedy the cut, the better. And then you just decorate it. Now, this Poised for Success, of course, they get a lot of jewelry, too, they can't use. So they put jewelry around it, earrings, and anything you can think of, ribbons, you know.
This is a cute
really
project to do with your kids.
It is awesome.
I think my daughter would just love this.
Right, and it's soft, and you can use it year after year after year.
I'm even thinking for a pillow. This could work as a nice little pillow, too.
It could work as a little pillow. That would be really cute.
Oh, so
and
I
you
see
can make it as small and as big as you want.
All right, so I just flipped it over, and I just realized what you're saying about the bottom rubber band, because now it creates that tuck point to give
exactly.
you the little pleats for where the pumpkin-like sides would go up.
Right, yep, and it's inside. Of course, you don't see it, and it's a nice little flat surface so that it fits nicely.
You're so creative. How did you get into this, Judy?
You know what? I have to admit, I just do it. I see a lot of stuff. I steal a lot of ideas, and I actually do them. It shocks me when people are like, oh, my gosh, how did you think of that? And I'm thinking, this is all over Pinterest and all at the Goodwill stores. You know, they have them on the shelves. I just actually do them.
That's what the difference is, right? People versus just looking, it's executing. It's actually getting off your butt and going out there, getting the stuff and doing it.
Right. Today, I put up spider webs all around the outside of my house, and I did it. I saw this on some site, you know, where you can use string or I used yarn, and I made huge spider webs in front of my porch.
From scratch? Like you made them with yarn?
Yes. I bought a whole thing of black yarn at Goodwill. I think it was, I want to say it was like 75 cents for the entire thing. I have now made three huge spider webs around my house. And, you know, I just looked at how they did it. It was very easy, and I made them.
And are you sticking giant spiders on there?
I am. I had two giant spiders, so it really looks fabulous. I'll send you guys a picture. You can post it. It's such a great. And the thing I like about this, When it's done, I cut it down and I throw it away. So I don't have to store it. I don't have to get it back out next year. And it took no time at all. And, you know, it's a spider web. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, another thing I like that you do, I'm holding up one of your painted branches or partially painted branches.
Is that her weapon? Is this your weapon, Judy, this branch?
Yeah.
This is what she uses to whip the newsroom into shape.
Yeah. When people irritate me in the newsroom, that's what happens.
She pulls out the whipping stick.
She uses the decorations.
I say, don't let me get my decorated stick out.
Right.
Yeah, so that is another great cheap idea. It doesn't get any cheaper than that. I just went around my yard and I found that big branch stick, I guess you can call it. And if you have a mantle, what a great accessory that is.
I agree.
Paint it or paint it black. And I actually painted it. I didn't have any spray paint, so I just painted it a little bit with some black paint I had around the house. You know, another great thing, you paint it purple, I guess, or orange. And you could even do some fun thing for Christmas if you wanted to upcycle it again and paint it like gold or silver. So anyway, that would go on your mantle for Halloween. Paint it black, put it on your mantle. Again, do a nice little black rat or a bird. And just try to keep everything black.
I like it. You can throw a little black raven, attach it to it. And then, you know, to kick it up a notch, as you're thinking, my brain's going, you can even sprinkle some, like, black glitter or some orange glitter on there, and it'll give it a little bit of a three-dimensional feel, too.
That would be awesome. Or put some lights around it. And, yeah, or spider webs or, you know, the sky's the limit again. I mean, and that you started it from a free branch that you got out of the yard.
I like starting from free because you can only go up
from
there.
Free is always good.
Judy Pollack, thank you so much. Really creative.
Absolutely.
We're going to be desperately anticipating your Christmas crafts. So get
God,
to it,
yeah,
all right?
I've got many. And listen, make sure all the listeners go on WGN's Goodbye Girl at WGNRadio.com. And I've got my Halloween episode up this month.
Awesome. We're looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Judy.
All right. Thanks, Frank.
All right. We'll see you soon. Dave, that was great. Did you learn something?
I did. I was watching her do this upstairs, and it's just so easy. She makes it look so easy, but now I'm going to try it. I've never been very crafty like this, but I'm definitely learning something in the Frank Fontana Show.
Judy inspires people.
Yeah,
she
does.
Really does.
To get creative. And you know what? She decorates the newsroom, which makes it into a different ambience every holiday.
Like, makes you want to keep delivering that news well, right?
Yeah, it just makes you feel like in a different place.
You got to hop on Facebook Live right now because our next guests are all about the visual here. It's a theater performance group. And the Don't Mess with the Devil performance here is happening. And in studio, we have Princess Radka, we have Dorota, we have the Devil and the Count joining us. And those aren't their real names, are they? Yes? Are they? No, they're not. This is from a mythical play, which will be performing when, Princess?
The play will take place on Saturday, October 22nd at 3 and 8 p.m. and Sunday, October 23rd at 3 p.m. at 1010 Madison Street in Oak Park at Madison Street Theater.
And we'll give that information one more time at the end of the segment. But Don't Mess with the Devil. This is the name of the production. But where does it stem from? The Devil? Would you like to speak of this, Lucifer?
It actually stems from the old ancient story, you know, based on a movie in Czech Republic, and that's around the Christmas. And you know, year is like around 1700, 17th century. You know, it's a fairy tale story with a great meaning, and it shows about good and bad, and how money could eventually change people the bad way. And you know, the sinners are taken to the hell, and they're measured. They're actually put on a scale, and a scale of sins, and whether they're kicked back to the surface and they stay in a hell.
So what's a reasonable measurement to stay to not go to hell?
The scale will tell you.
The scale will tell you.
Yeah, I can tell you, you know.
That's great.
It's a secret. You will find out when you get there.
So I'm hoping not to get there. I'm trying. I'm trying hard. So walk through some of the characters. Let's start with the princess. So what is your role in this?
All right, my role is the role of Princess Adelka. She is the very naive and loving princess. She is the good princess. Mm. She portrays in the play the goodness of the heart that it takes you the farthest. So that is my role.
And then we have Dorota.
Yeah, my character... Dorota is pretty, like, bad and mean person, and she's also very, very greedy. And
so do you work with the devil?
Actually, kind of. But I'm just trying to get rid of my stepson, who's got the inheritance, which I want to keep. So I just make an evil plan with this keeper of the castle.
Which is the count, right?
And we're sending
him. I'm not the count.
You're not the count?
I'm just advisor to
advisor.
The count.
You're advisor to the count. Okay.
This is how I can make more money.
So you could steal the count's money is what you're trying. I got you.
Yeah.
And you guys are in cahoots together, right?
Yeah, we plan something together. Yes, definitely.
To try to steal the money and then off your son. That's noble. That's
well.
Noble. And so the devil, are you the judge then?
Well, actually, my role, I'm a Lucifer. I'm a count of darkness, you might say. And at the end, we actually, after a few mistakes, finally get the right person, which is Dorota. And we put her on a scale, and we know that she's going to break the scale, and she does. Mm. So she stays.
She stays in hell.
And she's actually punished, as well as the count's advisor and another person. So I am a bad person, sort of. I am a count of darkness. However, I am actually fair.
Right. So you're evil but fair.
So, yes. Who deserves it stays. Who doesn't gets back.
Yeah. Right? Interesting. And so the money idea, and how does money change people? So how does this play into it?
Well, you can tell in this play portrays what happens when somebody becomes corrupt, when money takes over your life in not such a good way.
Yeah.
When you become actually wanting to have something that is not rightfully yours, that when you are in cahoots of trying to actually get your son's inheritance and put him in jail for life or...
To army.
Or
send him to army, after all.
It's ruthless, Dorota.
Yes,
look at you.
Yes, so it portrays that. So we are trying to show the children to be good.
Yeah, so it's a positive message at the end of the day.
Correct. The whole thing is about being positive and to show them the good traits. What is correct, what is supposed to be done, how the good princess wins and gets the prince, how the bad princess loses and ends up in hell.
We have to invite the politicians to this play.
Yeah, we definitely should invite some of the politicians to this play. The Chicago politicians should come and see this. And so how did you guys as a theater troupe, I mean, out of character, because right now you guys are all in character, out of character, how did you guys band together and what's the name of your troupe?
Well, the name of our theater is called Divadlo Bohemia, which is Divadlo means theater in Czech language. So you can find us under Divadlo Bohemia or Theater Bohemia online or on our Facebook. And we have met maybe 12 years ago. We formed this theater about 10 years ago. And Petra could tell you more about our theater.
Well, like Radka already said that we exist for 10 years already. We are a non-for-profit organization. And I have to say we are also the only Czech theater in the United States.
Wow. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's all just volunteers, you know. We just work in our spare time. So we get support from our families, you know, from also Czech community and the sponsors, and, you know, a whole bunch of people. They let us perform.
Have people outside the Czech community come to see some of the performances? And are they surprised by what they experience?
Yeah, I would have to say yes.
That's great.
But we spend, like, really countless of hours, you know, working for this theater because we love it and it's our passion.
And are you all independently actors? Outside of this?
Yeah. Well, like, no. I don't know about us. We are actors now after
Self-made.
10 years.
Not one. Not one professional
everybody
actor.
Everybody works.
And this is, so this is just pure passion for you guys.
Yeah. You know, it's a really, really tight budget, you know, after all those countless hours. And, you know, without our viewers and sponsors, we wouldn't be able to do what we love.
It's so great to hear that people still appreciate culture enough to want to invest into theater and to help support folks like you to put on great performances and to walk around Chicago with these costumes on.
I would like to add that our play, Don't Mess with the Devil, is in Czech language with English subtitles.
How does that happen?
Well, there's a little magic, as in every fairy tale, but yes, we actually project our backgrounds. So we project the subtitles because we want to open it up to the whole community.
Yeah.
And we have people of all communities coming to the play. So
how does it translate? I speak Italian and sometimes the words don't sound the same when I try to say them. You know.
It doesn't. Not only the words, but also things like the devil and the hell. The meaning in Czech language is a little different than here in America. It's really, really bad. In Czech, it's just used to quote-unquote scare children.
But it's not real. So is it not real for your culture? Is it different? I mean, obviously when people say you're going to hell here in America, it's a very serious thing. Over
it
there, it's more nonchalant.
No. Yes, it's more of a common phrase, I would say. Because, you know, people there since 500, so we're all long to go. Actually, the very rich people used to scare the very poor people that work their fields with things like, you're going to go to hell if you don't work for me, if you say something up against me, and things like that. So it's just one of the things that people grow up with.
Hmm. Interesting. Do you guys put on more than one production? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to just add to that in a children's world, obviously, as parents, use it as discipline to children, okay? So when you grow up, it's just a little bit different, you know, and it's not so bad. However, when you're a child, you probably believe that.
Yeah, especially if you walk around looking like you, like a devil with horns on. You're scaring me right now.
Well, then that means I do a good job.
You're doing a great job, which means people should come out and see the play. The play is Don't Mess with the Devil, How Money Changes People. And give us the location and time again.
1010 Madison Street Theater in Oak Park, Madison Street Theater.
Got it.
And you can also buy tickets at our website. It's www.divadlobohemiachicago.com.
And do you guys stream this at all on internet? Can people watch it online? I see you got one of your guys here.
Yes, right now.
Filming. You can watch right
Facebook
now.
Facebook Live.
Yeah. Facebook Live. So people can watch your productions on Facebook Live as well?
No.
Oh, just today's show.
Yeah. Today's.
Awesome.
If I may add, Frank, and I think it's actually worth mentioning, that we have been supported by the greatest hockey team in the world, which is Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, go Hawks.
And, you know, there is Marianne Hossa, which we know who is he and where is he from, and Michael Roosevelt. And a newcomer is Michael Campney.
So these guys are actually supporting the theater?
They're supporting the theater. They're donating things,
That's great.
And they actually come to our show, which is like great feelings. And actually,
You're kidding.
It's a very, we have very big kick.
You know, that alone,
that,
just the
awesome.
Fact that a Chicago fan, hey, folks out there from the Chicago Marathon, how'd you do out there? Good stuff. Irish Mexico, right? Yeah. Congratulations. Good for you. I mean, that's phenomenal. So people knowing that and listening to that right now, with Chicago Blackhawks fans who just maybe want to see, you know, some of their favorite players at the theater can come and enjoy a great production and meet some of their favorite Chicago Blackhawks players.
I mean, we appreciate that they have such a busy schedule and they still find the time to support us, you know, and meet us and see us, which is
We appreciate you guys for continuing to, you know, put art and culture at the forefront of Chicago, no matter, regardless of what language or culture. I think it's a beautiful thing. Oh, thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
And good luck.
It's been great
being here.
I'm going to try to make it. I want to see the devil do his thing. All right, we're back. We got a full studio here. We got our theater troupe still hanging out. We got Beelzebub, the devil's hanging. We got princesses. And we also have some delicious fall cocktails on cue here. We have Mike Caricelli, Midwest Division Manager for Vision Wine and Spirits. Mike, man, you're just sliding in here. How's it going, buddy?
It's going well. Marathon traffic.
Yeah, I'm sure, man. It's crazy. And you got a room full of theater people. Look at this. There's crazy stuff going on here. We got booze. I mean, this is a way to end a show.
It's an everyday Sunday for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, pretty much it is. So let's talk about it. You got some delicious recipes for our listeners to try out?
Absolutely, I do. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, let's start with one of your top favorites. What are these? Which ones is your favorite?
Well, my favorite right here is the Allspice Sour. It has a little Berenson bushel barrel, apple bourbon, great for the fall. A little lemon juice, about 3/4 ounce, about 1/4 ounce of the Bitter Truth Pimento Dram, and about 1/4 ounce of simple syrup. Something that's very simple.
Yeah.
You know, to me personally, craft cocktails are where craft beer was about 5 to 7 years ago.
And when you say craft cocktails, you mean like pre-mixed? Or like just using, explain to me, what do you mean by craft cocktail?
Well, I think a great example is, you know, if you were to go into a bar, your favorite bar,
can you mix and talk at the same time? Let's see how handy you are.
It's difficult, but we'll see what we can do.
What are you pouring there?
Here I'm going to be pouring the Berenson Bushel Barrel Apple Bourbon.
I can smell it from here.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, let me see that bottle actually.
You got it.
I'm not gonna swig it, people.
Don't take it from me.
Oh, good Lord, that smells good. So this is Berenson?
Berenson, yes.
Bushel and Barrel, straight bourbon whiskey, neutral spirits, caramel colorings, and natural flavors. Oh, that's good. So it's got a little bit of a... I'd like to... Do you have just a glass I could try a little bit?
Absolutely, right here.
Yeah, here, I'm going to show the camera. So if you're watching on Facebook Live, where's our camera? Here, there we go. Look at that. Now, I'm not a big bourbon person. I got to be honest with you.
Well, the good thing about this, it's 60 proof. So it's Kentucky straight bourbon, but it has the Berenson apple liqueur. So it's very approachable.
Oh, yes.
It is very nice.
I think I could drink that.
You think so?
Yeah.
No, but just kind of getting back to it, I mean, there's a long history of Berenson and the Bitter Truth with craft cocktails. And this is one of the reasons why I'm here is, again, if you were to go to your favorite watering hole a few years ago, they may have only had two different types of a craft beer. To fast forward to today, If they don't have, if they don't have what you want, you'll go to the bar across the street.
Right.
And so now craft cocktails is kind of getting there. No one's really having a gin and tonic anymore. They're kind of, you know,
doing the Moscow Mules. They're doing these fancier drinks.
They're chefs behind a bar.
Right.
And these tools, the Barons and Apple Liqueur, the Pear, the Wild Cherry, the Ice Mint, the Apple Bourbon, but most importantly, the Bitter Truth, those are the tools mixologists use.
Is that the Bitter Truth there?
That's the Apple Liqueur. The Bitter Truth is down here in the bag.
You're holding out on me, Mike?
I think so.
Don't do it, man. Bust it out. This is your golden opportunity. Because I can tell you this, as a non-bourbon drinker, I'm sold on this one. This Berenson is pretty good. Let's see here. The Bitter Truth.
See, these are the Creole bitters. They're all natural. They're made by two world-renowned mixologists, Stefan Berg and Alexander Hawk, really well-known.
I always wanted to know, because I used to actually sling drinks back in the day, like way, way early on in my career.
I think we all have.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't, then you haven't lived.
Yeah.
What's in bitters?
Bitters, basically, they're all natural ingredients, cardamom, juniper, some Angostura bark. And then whatever Stefan, he puts his own little twist on it, and you know, there's Creole, there's celery, there's aromatic, orange, grapefruit, celery. But the best thing about it, 3 to 5 dashes will enhance right what you're drinking right there. So if you put...
I'm going to do it then. You want me to do that? I'm going to do that.
Absolutely. What you'll do there, tasting it straight, it'll taste like an apple bourbon. You put 3 to 5 dashes of the Creole, the Bitter Truth Creole bitters in there, it will enhance it and it will taste like a Sazerac. And we've come up with a cocktail called the Sazer Apple.
Hold on. I'm getting a little flavor here. Oh, yes.
You know?
That just kicked it up about 50 notches right there.
Absolutely. And we're doing this on the fly right now. This is great.
So is there any truth to bitters being a stomach?
Yes.
It is. You know where I was going with this.
Yes, I do.
Because I remember I used to literally bartend when I was like 18, 19 years old. And an old bartender I work with said to me, if everybody comes up to you and has a stomach ache, you get a little ginger ale, you get a little bitters.
Oh, yeah.
Or 7-Up and you put it again, you give it to them, it'll fix them.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, one time I had this lady sitting at a bar, and she's like, "Oh, my stomach's bothering me a little bit. Can't drink." I said, "Here, try this," and it worked. So there is truth to that. What in bitters is the magic juice?
You know, I wish I knew that question. I really do. But back in the day, it was used for medicinal purposes, and also before Prohibition to make bad booze taste good.
Mm.
And now, you know, after the resurgence of the cocktail scene about 20, 30 years ago, you're seeing all different types of bitters come out right now. And the craft cocktail scene is just exploding on us.
Yeah.
And just one little quick thing. If we were to go into our independent, you know, Benny's store or anywhere that's around here, Benny's or an Armanetti, what have you, or Sal's Beverage World, you know, if there's nobody there to help them, you know, a customer will see 1,000 bottles of beer, wine, and spirits. But in between what they know and what they don't know are some really cool things, which is the Berenson, which is the Bitter Truth. They're just fun ways to spice up a cocktail for every season.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, seriously, I'm not much of a bourbon drinker, but this is something I would, around this time of year, moving into Christmas, I would certainly keep this in the house.
Well, I'm going to leave it here for you.
Well, fantastic. I'm definitely keeping it in my house then. This is great. And, you know, speaking to that craft, you know, a beverage movement, you're even seeing it in the bartenders themselves.
Oh,
they're becoming these
chefs,
personalities. These chefs, yeah. Exactly. I'm a big fan of Kraft House. Are you familiar with Kraft House and the brand? And that's the story of a bartender, you know, who made it into, you know, taking this idea and brand and making it into a whole thing that's now on shelves everywhere.
And you're talking about Charles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the first time I went to the aviary where he was at, he asked me, he goes, "Mike, what would you like to drink?" I go, "You know, something with a little bourbon, with a little citrus to it." He comes back with a rock glass with one of those round pre-made ice cubes.
Yep.
I went to him, I looked at him, I go, where's the drink? His server came back with a slingshot. All the cocktail was inside of the ice cube. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, what these mixologists do, I mean, these are the spices they use behind a bar, because they're chefs behind a bar. And, you know, in life in general, I'm not really in awe of anything, but I'm inspired by a lot. What these mixologists do, it is creating something out of nothing.
Right.
It is so inspiring.
Yeah, Charles Jolie, right? Yeah, Charles was on a show a couple times.
Yeah.
And made the, you know, the custom craft house right in front of me, and
yeah,
it was just spectacular. Yeah. But I think of guys like that and other bartenders around that are totally dressed in a role and have the look. And it's back to the day where, you know, the bartender was somebody special, not just somebody slinging drinks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like they're mixologists. They're true, you know, they have a passion for it. So it's great that, you know, the liquor is now following suit.
Right.
Which is great. So where can people find Berents and all the other products we're talking about?
You know, I named a few stores already. I mean, there's Benny's Beverage Depot, which there's 32 locations statewide. Sal's Beverage World, and any type of an Armanetti or United or Cardinal liquor store, you'll be able to find them in. And then, you know, restaurants, you can look at the any type of craft cocktail house that's out there. They'll be using the Berents and Apple Liqueur and the Bushel and Barrel. But the bitter truth, if you were to go into any craft mixology establishment in the city of Chicago, you will find the Bitter Truth products there as well.
Good stuff. Mike Caruselli from Midwest Division Manager of Vision Wine and Spirits. Thanks for coming in, man. Thanks for the booze,
it.
Too. That's good stuff.
Appreciate you having me on.